National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, January 23, 1985. This is Arlene Shapiro interviewing respondent Mrs. Bess Feingold. Mrs. Feingold, can you give me your address?
2355 Eldridge Street, apartment SB.
Mrs. Feingold, can you tell us something about your family, about your mother, your father, brothers, sisters?
I have no sisters. I have four brothers. My parents lived in West Virginia before we moved to Pittsburgh, and that was over 60 years ago. And we were very hard hit when we first came here, and Rachmanim helped us. That is why I'm very interested in it.
When did you come to Pittsburgh?
During the height of Depression. What the date was, I don't remember.
Were you born in West Virginia?
No, I was born in Pittsburgh. But I was 6 months old when my parents moved to West Virginia. We moved to Moundsville, West Virginia. I don't know if you ever heard of the place.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the state penitentiary is.
I see. And when were you born?
March 12, 1912.
And you moved to Pittsburgh in your teens?
Yes. I was 19.
And your whole family, or you?
My parents and my brothers moved here.
Okay.
I was the only girl with four brothers.
Were you the youngest?
Or? No, two brothers older, two younger.
In the middle.
And they beat hell out of me every once in a while.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us something about your home, about the atmosphere, about the religious atmosphere?
Well, my parents were very religious. My father was a gabba at the shul.
Can you tell us what a gabba did?
Well, he did an overlooking, you know, and make sure everything was just right. And we were brought up it was very religious at home, but we had a happy life. Everything was just, we could come to my mother and tell her anything we wanted to tell her. Our father, you know,
mm-hmm.
But it was my mother that we could tell everything and anything.
Mm-hmm. What about economically? It was difficult? Is that why you came to Pittsburgh?
Yes, we had lost our home and our place in business. See, my father had this store in a mining town, Moundsville, West Virginia, mining town. And he gave charge accounts to the people. He charged. And when the mines went on strike, he carried them. And a lot of them forgot to pay their bills. So we lost our home, we lost our business. So we came to Pittsburgh because my mother's people were here.
Is your family here?
Yeah.
What about aspects of your home life that had to do with discipline of the children? Did your mother take care of that, or was your father a disciplinarian?
My mother was the big shot. She took care of everything. My father and mother made an agreement. The way she said, she ran the home, and he made the living.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got married, that was the agreement I had. I ran the home, you make the living.
What about cultural aspects? Would you say they centered around religious other things also?
No, religious life.
Mm-hmm.
We had to, when we lived in West Virginia, we had no shul in the town. There was very few Jewish people. But my parents kept strictly kosher. And when we moved to Pittsburgh, there was shul every evening, and my mother and father had my brothers to go with them. And they did the best they could.
Is that when your father became a gabba at the shul in Pittsburgh? Or?
In Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we moved to school.
Was that his job? Or
no.
Was that something?
That's something they gave him because he was retired and had chain time. See, when we moved to Pittsburgh, we moved on Stevenson Street to
mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh. And that is, well, there's not much, nothing there now. And then after that, we moved to Locust Street, and then from Locust Street, I got married while living in Pittsburgh, and I moved to Weaning. See, my husband was a Weaning boy. And then we moved back to Carrick, my husband and I, we got a store. And my parents moved in with us in the store in Carrick.
Mm, okay.
When we moved to Pittsburgh, we were always religious. But when we moved to Pittsburgh, my father got more religious because of the being able to go to shul more often and everything. And when we moved to Squirrel Hill, that's when my father was very active at the Shire Tour.
Mm-hmm. I see. Did he retire in Pittsburgh completely? He did not have work by the time he moved here? He was older?
No, he was older. Okay. Retired. But he was my babysitter.
Oh, my. That's interesting. That's nice to have a grandparent as a babysitter for the nice
years. Oh, I'll tell you, I could go out and my husband and I can go anywhere. But our son didn't care, but just let my father go and see what happened.
Can you tell us something about the life in Pittsburgh when you were a young girl? And maybe even tell us a little about the difference between Pittsburgh and small town Jewish life. You did say there was a big difference.
Oh, very big difference. There was a lot to do here in Pittsburgh, in Jewish life. We had the Ike's up in the Center Avenue that we went to. And, you know, there was a community which had things for young people to do. Now, in West Virginia, we lived 12 miles south of Wheeling, which we had nothing hardly at all, because there was no Jewish people in the town that I lived in. It was only three or four families, and there wasn't anything there. And we had to go to Wheeling if we wanted to get a piece of kosher meat or if we wanted to get a chicken killed or anything. There was nothing in our town.
So how did, is that what you did? Did you go to Wheeling for all of your food?
Oh, yes. We went to Wheeling, got all our meat, kosher meat. See, the in Wheeling, Rabbi Perlman, I'll show him, was the rabbi. He was the butcher. He was the shechet. He was the moil. He was everything rolled into one.
Right.
That's the way it was in those years.
Yeah. They did everything.
Everything.
What kind of things did the Ikes have for the Pittsburgh Jewish community? What kinds of things did they provide?
They had basketball, swimming, and they had dances. A lot of, just like they would have today for the younger ones at the center.
Right.
They had everything up there.
How did they work it? Did they have it free to the community?
Free.
Were there dues?
No, no. Well, I never knew about dues at that time, but all I knew was free to the community that we went. Could have been dues, but I would never knew anything about it. But it was anybody. They never turned anyone away. That was the Irene Kaufman settlement at that time.
Right. I know a lot of people took advantage of the things they offered. What can you tell us about your school days, where you went to school with your friends, your teachers?
Well, I went to school in Moundsville. And the teachers were nice as far as it concerned, but very few of them knew much about Jewish people. And some of them were racist. Some were, some weren't, you know. And I went from the first grade, they had no kindergarten, but we went from the first grade through high school there.
And what was it like? What were the classrooms like, the discipline?
Oh, I think children today get away with more than we did when we went to school. Because the teachers then thought nothing of giving you a slap or a smack or something. Today, you know, they get in trouble.
Right.
But it wasn't any different than none of other schools, but we had our high school right in our town, and we had no bus transportation. We were able to, we went home for lunch, and we came back to school, but it was just like anything. And it wasn't a big town, so there wasn't a lot of students.
Were you friends with all of the students there? I mean, it didn't matter
my
if
brother,
was Jewish and who wasn't.
My brother played football for the high school, so I don't have to tell you. We used to have everybody at our home. All the football players, everybody said. And my mother always said, you've got to learn to be friends with everybody, because when you grow up and get into the world, you're not only going to be associated with one certain kind of people. You're going to associate with everybody. In fact, I was raised next door to a Catholic church.
What happened when you and your brothers were of the age when kids start to date? Was there dating?
We either dated boys or girls from Wheeling, or we didn't date, because we weren't allowed to go out with the others.
What about if one of your friends would invite you to dinner? Were you allowed to eat in their home?
No, I wasn't allowed to eat in their home.
So there were a few problems with social life.
Yeah, very. It was hard, because it's not like in the city where you have other Jewish people and everything, that you can go here and go there. It was very hard.
Can you tell us something about the medical care and the health facilities of the different of the small town versus Pittsburgh and of that many years ago compared to 1985?
Well, the doctors there were a doctor, surgeon, everything. Eye doctor. One doctor did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
family general practitioner,
yeah,
certainly.
He did everything. And here we have different doctors for every little thing. There was one doctor. And there was Dr. Ashford, Dr. Wilson, and Dr. Bone. There was about four doctors in the whole town.
Mm-hmm. How many people in the town, did you say?
I think about 10,000-12,000. Small community.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, how would you say, the black people weren't allowed to live in certain sections with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
They had to live with another group. And they weren't allowed at that time to go to the theaters with us or anything.
Oh.
And they weren't going to school with us. They had, because we were considered south of the Mason-Dixon. And if they wanted to go, they had to go into Wheeling. They had a special high school there for them, or grade school.
So this would have been in the late 20s or the 30s?
Mm-hmm.
That recent.
Uh-huh.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, yes.
What kinds of things did you do as a teenager for fun, for recreation?
I didn't. Because there was nothing there.
Yeah.
Unless I went to the playground, there was a playground, we would go there and a swimming pool, and that was it. Otherwise, there wasn't anything in the small town.
Were there things that the other teenagers did that you couldn't do because you weren't allowed to say?
Well, I couldn't go to the dances because I wasn't allowed. There were not Jewish people to go with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I couldn't go on picnics because you weren't allowed. There was no Jewish boys or girls. See, my parents were very strict.
Mm-hmm. Because it would be very difficult, I would think, for you and for them.
See, my brothers didn't care so much. They went.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't allowed.
Did they date girls who were not Jewish?
No.
Because they just went to the picnic.
Mm-hmm. See, one of my brothers played football for the high school there.
But
so he was everywhere.
Right, but that's not dating.
No.
Different, right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you came to Pittsburgh as a teenager, and did you meet your husband as a young girl?
This is about to sound. My husband, people lived in Wheeling, West Virginia. And his father was in the wholesale produce business, and my parents had this store. And he'd sell produce to my parents, and he managed to come every time at 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So he could go have lunch in our house. And I'd slam the door in his face. And his father would say, "Someday you're going to marry him." I said, "Not me." But we were married for 40 years.
Oh, my goodness. Did you have a courtship as people have today, or did your family?
No, we went out. No, I didn't go with him while I was in West Virginia because I was too young at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But when we moved to Pittsburgh, I was a little older, and he came up, and we started to go.
Okay, interesting. When did you get married?
1940, June 20th, 1940.
What about when your husband first went into business after you were married? Did he go into business by himself, or did
no.
he get a job for someone right away?
No, when we first came here, to Pittsburgh. See, after we were married, we went back to Wheeling. He worked for the city.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we decided to come up, he had a cousin that had a store, and they wanted to sell it. And it was almost towards the end of the war. So we bought the store from help with my parents and my aunts and uncles, and we bought the store. And we kept the store for about 4 years. And my husband was handicapped. But he worked like as if he wasn't. And that's how, and we lived in Carrick till 9, when Jay was born in 46. Till about 49 or 50, we moved into Squirrel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
my husband.
Mm-hmm. What kind of business was it?
Little grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
That was just at the end of the
mm-hmm.
war.
And then you moved to Squirrel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And were you in Squirrel Hill while you were raising your children?
Just the one boy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in Squirrel Hill. And our house was open. When he started to go to school, I told him, the house is open. You can bring as many friends as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And he always did. The house was open, always for him and his friends.
Mm-hmm. So you have one child. Mm-hmm.
He's going to be 39.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Is he in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm. So tough.
Oh, well. What about the social life with you and your husband living in Squirrel Hill? I guess it was a little easier to have a...
Yeah, well, it was, but we didn't... My husband worked two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because we needed to send the boys to school.
Mm-hmm.
But we went out and everything, but I would go with him in the evenings for his second job. He worked at Meadows at the racetrack. He was a cashier there.
I see.
But we had quite a few friends, and we
mm-hmm.
were kept busy on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Because the working during the day, after you come home from work, we'd get down.
Mm-hmm. I guess you didn't have time for hobbies and family vacations much, though.
We went on vacation. We used to go to Atlantic City mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Well, that's nice.
See, I have a brother that lived there, my oldest brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's a doctor, and he lived in Atlantic City. So we'd go there.
And you still have family all over at different places?
This brother that lives in Atlantic City, he lives there for the summer. He's got a home in Florida for the
mm-hmm.
winter. I have a young, well, the next brother died about quite a few years ago. And then another brother lives in Erie during the summer and Florida in the winter. And I have a brother that lives in Youngwood.
Where's Youngwood?
Near Greensburg.
Oh, that's not far. That's good. Tell us something about the difference in Squirrel Hill then and now. What changes in the neighborhood have you seen? What cultural changes have you seen? Economic changes?
Oh yeah, a lot of economic
mm-hmm.
things are... I think it's more like a dog-eat-dog world on Murray Avenue, if you know what
I mean. You mean now more than then?
Now. Then, on Saturday nights or Thursday nights when you go shopping, you'd see more people on the street and they were friendly. Now you don't see anybody if you go shopping in the evenings. The stores aren't open in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And you got pizza parlors, beer places, which you never had before.
Mm-hmm.
It was more friendlier.
Mm-hmm. It was more of a neighborhood.
Neighborhood.
Stores
mm-hmm.
than that.
That's right.
It's true. It's changed.
And you'd see people on the street with pushies asking for donations and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You see nothing today.
Mm-hmm. The character of the neighborhood has
mm-hmm.
changed a bit, I think.
Oh, quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about different aspects of community involvement? I know that the Lefem Anim is your favorite. What else can you tell us about organizations and community involvement, and then we'll come to Lefem Anim?
Well, I didn't belong to anything too much. I used to belong to Pioneer Women
mm-hmm.
and Hadassah, but I dropped everything because my husband took sick and
mm-hmm.
I had to take care of him. So I didn't belong to too much organizations, but his pride and joy was Lefem Anim, and
mm-hmm.
so was mine. That's what I...
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, I didn't do too much organization work.
Your participation in Lefem Anim, what goes way far back. When did you first start? When you first moved to Pittsburgh as a teenager?
Well, after we moved to Pittsburgh, we moved on Stevenson Street, and after that we moved to Locust Street. And we lived in Kazin's apartments. You remember Kazin the butcher?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we moved into their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother-in-law, Mrs. Kazin's mother, Sophie Sachs, was very busy with Lefem Anim.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw how hard hit my parents were, and she gave us food.
Mm-hmm.
And from that day on, I always said, if anything I could do, I was going to
mm-hmm.
help.
And when did you start becoming active in it yourself?
Well, Sophie Sachs was first. When she died, Charlie Sable took over. I don't know, do you remember him? So when he died, Ben Edelstein took over, and I helped Ben, because I was friends with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Ben died, I took over.
When about did you start working with
Ben?
Oh,
it's about over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. With Ben Edelstein?
Mm-hmm.
And you really have taken over now?
And when he died, I took over.
I see. And what does that entail for you? What do you do? What do you have to actually do?
We get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, go to the produce yards, do all the buying, the fruit and vegetables, and you buy your fruit and vegetables according to what's in season.
Mm-hmm.
Meat and bread is delivered, and you pack boxes. Now you get bread, meat, potatoes, onions, carrots, celery, apples, oranges, depending on prices.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I said cabbage or not. Radishes, grapefruit. You know,
mm-hmm.
you give them a box of food. And you give it to, we used to give it every week when Ben was living. Then we started every 2 weeks. Now it's, then we went to every 3 weeks. Now it's once a month because the finances are low.
Mm-hmm.
See, we send out letters for soliciting. We have a farm that we get, we have the names that we send the letters to twice a year to the same people. And they send in money. Well, they're not sending it in as good as they used to, because things are rough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we go once a month now.
So you solicit twice a year, and whatever money you have, you split it up amongst how many people, would you say?
Well, there's, at Passover, there's quite a few, because everybody gets 2 boxes. But throughout the year, everybody gets 1 box, and it's about 35 people, families.
Every month, 35 families get food.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same families.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How do you determine which families receive?
Well, sometimes the Jewish Social Service calls you, and they ask. And according to the Jewish religion, the Orthodox Jewish religion, I don't care if you're a millionaire, if you ask for food, you're not allowed to turn them down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know that or not. And we I've had some of these people on the list that had been when Ben Edelstein also had charge of it, and I still have some. And some of them call in, and they're investigated, and that's how you know.
The agency looks into it?
No, agency has nothing to do with it. We have an attorney that investigates.
Oh, I see. If he's part of the organization, mm-hmm. he just takes care of that part of it.
He pays the bills now.
You have about 30 families. What if there are 5 more families who feel that they need it? How do you go about obtaining money?
Well, we stretch it out. So we don't, if we have to give you, this is just an example, I wouldn't say for sure. So instead of giving you 2 bunches of carrots, we give you one, we give them one.
You give them enough for a meal or a week usually? How do you try to do it?
We don't guarantee how long it'll last. It depends on how much you cook and everything. But it's a supplement, is what it really
mm-hmm.
is.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting. And do you deliver to their home?
Yes, some of them are most of them is delivered to East End in Oakland and on Center Avenue
mm-hmm.
in that project.
It's all to Jewish families.
Oh yeah, we have our black men that delivered,
mm-hmm.
and they get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because after all, they gas and wear and tear
right.
on their car. And there's a few in Squirrel Hill.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But during Passover, there's much more.
They need it. It's
mm-hmm.
more difficult.
Well, during Passover, we have people that come from Carnegie, Crafton,
mm-hmm.
Apollo, and Leechburg.
Now, are you affiliated with the groups that the synagogues raise money for? For example, I know that every year the synagogues will say that they have a special fund for people who can't afford their Passover food, and that's not part of your program? I see.
No, madam, because people will go to the synagogues mm-hmm. for money. The synagogue will give them $1, $2, you know. But what we give them, they can't buy for passively. They can't buy it for $100. We give them a complete Passover, plus fruit and vegetables, mm-hmm. you know. They get eggs. They get chicken. They get wine. Everybody gets 5 or 10 pounds of matzah compared to, you know, considering the size of family. And they get everything, you name it. They get tea, they get cookies for the family, they get candles, they get gefilte fish and horseradish.
Do you try to give them according to how large their family is?
Yes.
So that they really have a family
yes.
meal?
Mm-hmm.
Are most of the recipients and the givers, is the organization, does it matter at all if anyone's Orthodox or not?
No.
It doesn't matter.
No. As long as you're Jewish.
Wondered if it was organized along the lines, but was affiliated with the Orthodox group. Can you tell us anything about the politics of the times over the periods that we're talking about, the Depression, about Prohibition? Did it affect your life at all?
Mm-mm.
Things over the...
No, I had an uncle mm-hmm. who was a bootmaker, but they didn't bother me. It had nothing to do with
yeah.
me.
Have you been involved in politics at all?
No, I don't believe in involvement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your husband's business life, you were involved also in working with him?
Yes, I worked with him in our store. We
mm-hmm.
had a store and we worked together. And because our rooms were in the front, and our rooms were in the back and the store was in the front, so we all worked there.
So you were able to help me.
Let's turn this over.